All right. So yesterday we talked about Shaul's two daughters, Michal and Merav, that David married. We discussed two opinions. One is that Merav passed away and only afterwards David married Michal, because you can't marry two sisters as well, they're both alive. And the other option is that Merav was not a valid kedushin. Michal's was, at least according to David. According to Shaul, was not a valid kedushin. And then we also continued talking about someone who raises an orphan in their house, the Torah says they gave birth to that orphan. Now, on the note of being a parent without actually being someone's parent, the Gemara starts Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeini. This is the middle of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph in the Ein Yaakov Simin Chaf Gimel. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmeini Amar Rav Yonasan Kolam Lamed Es Ben Chaver Teira Malah Alav Akasav Kilo Yoldai. Anyone who teaches his son is a fellow's son Teira, the Torah considers it as if he fathered him. Shnemar ve'ele tell this Aaron and Moshe, as it says, these are the children of Aaron and Moshe. Uchsid ve'elech mis b'nei Aaron. The next pasuk is, and these are the sons of Aaron. And the pasuk does not continue telling Moshe's children. It just says Aaron's children. Just says Aaron's children. So the obvious question is, why is it saying Moshe? So to tell us. Aaron Yolad, Aaron was the actual father of Moshe Livman. Moshe taught them Torah. Moshe taught the entire Jewish nation Torah. Then, because Aaron's children, so the Torah considers as if Aaron's, as if they're Aaron's children. As if they're Moshe's children. Therefore, they're named after Moshe. You'd ask, Moshe taught the entire Jewish nation, not just Aaron's sons. The Kli Yakar points this out on the Pasuk, and it offers a different answer. Elsewhere, it explains that all four of Aaron's children were supposed to have passed away, but only two of them passed away, because Moshe davened for mercy for them, and therefore they're named after Moshe. So now, doesn't the Kli Yakar seem to be contradicting this Gemara? The explanation is that the Kli Yakar is adding. The Kli Yakar is saying that the reason why the pasuk is specifying that Moshe and that these children were of Moshe and Aaron was because since Moshe taught them Torah, they're now no longer Aaron's children. The Gzeira was that Aaron's children would die. Now they're not Aaron's children, now they're Moshe's children. When Aaron made the Egel, there was a decree that all of Aaron's children, that Aaron and would pass away are Levi, without children. That's one of the many reasons why none of them who pass away. And the Gemara over there says, what happened to 11 in the summer? Moshe davened for them, and they survived. Now, the way how they were able to survive was because they learned from Moshe Rabbeinu, they were no longer Aaron's children, they were Moshe Rabbeinu's children. And so, Aaron, they're safe from the decree. Similarly, elsewhere, he learned that Rabbi Yechanan had 10 children, and all of them passed away. He'd often go around to mourners, comforting them, saying, I know what he went through, this, and he points to a necklace that he had around his neck that had a tooth or something from his youngest son. This is a bone from my youngest son that I had to bury. After his 10 sons died, he had one more son remaining, and he sent that son to learn with Shmuel in Bavel. And there also is for the same kind of reason, that's uh, in case he was worried that he, at Ashmayim, there was a decree against him that he passed away childless. So now, it's no longer his child. It's a Shmuel's child. So in a certain sense. So, thus he was able to get out of the Xera. That's his child was able to survive. Alright, so now a new thing at the Gemara continues. L'chein kem Hashem al Beis Yaakov asher padas Avram. So says Hashem to Beis Yaakov, who freed Avram. The simple meaning of the pasuk is, so says Hashem to Beis Yaakov, Hashem who saved Avram from who redeemed Avram from the fire, from the many other trials and tribulations he went through. So says Hashem to Beis Yaakov. However, you can also read the pasuk as so says Hashem to the house of Yaakov, who freed Avram, that Yaakov redeemed Avram. Now, when did Yaakov redeem Avram? So, Rav Yehuda shepadei mitzar gidol bondi. He redeemed Avram. Hashem made a bit of Ben Amsarim with Avram, Avinu. We had a teda, Iger Yezarach, Beres Leilehem. Know that your descendants will be foreigners in a land that's not theirs. By rights, it should have been Avram who should have had to go through it, his children selling each other denying the sale, pretending as hiding it, covering it up with it as dead. The whole thing that Yaakov went through. By rights, it should have been in Avram. It didn't go to Avram. It didn't even go to Yitzchak. It went to Yaakov. So Yaakov, in a sense, redeemed Avram because Avram didn't have to go through that suffering. Yaakov went through it for Avram instead of Avram. We actually explained it that it's just this regular Tzar Gidol Bonim that he had 12 versus Avram. It's a lot less. Versus Tesis explains what kind of Tzar is that? It's a zchus to be able to raise the 12 Shvatim. So he explains that that's what it is. It's the suffering that they had to go through with the Mechiras Yosef and everything, and having to go down to Mitzrayim and all that. That's what the pasuk says. Avram Avinu had a Yitzchak, Yishmael, and the Bnei Keturah. It's off the top of my head, I don't remember the number. I do not know the pasuk by heart. You can ask my father. Not my father. He also had Bakol, a daughter, true. But the daughters aren't being counted, because if we're counting the daughters, then Yaakov also had plenty of daughters. Another name called Shevet. There was a twin with every Shevet, besides for Yosef who had 0 and Binyamin who had 2. And with Yosef was born Dina, so that brings 25 children in that case. Regardless, point is that Yaakov had to deal with the whole situation that Avram and Yitzchak didn't have to go through. So Avram, in a sense, redeemed Yaakov, in a sense, redeemed Avram. And that's what the pasuk says, "Lay ata yevish Yaakov." You should not be ashamed, Yaakov, me'aviv, from your father. After Avram, it should have gone to Yitzchak, but it didn't go to Yitzchak. It went to Yaakov. That he doesn't be ashamed from his grandfather. That he took over their pain, and therefore he'd be able to stand up and face them without shame. So now back to the previous topic before the thing of it fathering someone without actually fathering them. We talked about Charles's daughters. We talked about David marrying Charles' daughters, and specifically we talked about how Michal Palti married her. David married a Michal. According to Charles, it was not a valid kedushin, either because he held that a loan and a pruta, the kedushin, the one doing the kedushin is doing it intending in the loan versus David held that he's intending the pruta, or Shaul held that wasn't valid because he held that 200 foreskins that's worth less than a pruta for all practical purposes for Shaul, versus David held that it was still worth a pruta because it's usable for a dog and cat food. Medav was just alone. Was just Goliath. That David killed Goliath, and Charles said that whoever kills Goliath, I'll make him rich and give him my daughter. That's a loan. That's the halachic status of a loan. So what? Which is not even a plegish. A plegish. There's different opinions as to how one makes a plegish. That's one of the main ones is that it's the some form of kedushin, even if it's not necessarily. There's different opinions as to it. There's some opinions that a regular person can't even have a plegish, only a person of high importance, like a king or something. Plegish is a whole different subject. This is according to this opinion, and David didn't even end up actually marrying Merav. He according to all opinions, he never actually got her. He was promised her, but didn't actually get her. According to Rav Yossi, he did have her for a short time and did kedushin with her, and then she was given to Adriel. Shaul gave her to Adriel, holding that for whatever reason. And then afterward, offered him Medav, which that he did marry, afterwards Medav died, and then Shaul gave David Medav, Michal, and then again same kind of thing happened where he took her back and gave her to a different man, to Palti. So there are different explanations in how that happened. But regardless, the point is that according to everyone, David at least held that it was a valid kedushin. According to Abiyasi, it was a valid kedushin, and across the board, according to Rabbi Yosef ben Parcha, it was a machlokes of whether it was a valid kedushin between Shaul and David. So now, regardless, David doesn't have Palti. David doesn't have Michal. Michal is living with Palti, and she lived with Palti for the remainder of Shaul's reign for years. Or there's different opinions how many years it was, but regardless, it was at least a year. So now, Ksiv Palti is Ksiv Paltiel. There's two different psukim that refer to this Palti. One calls him Palti and one calls him Paltiel. So why is he being called those two different names? I'm Rabbi Yochanan Palti Shmai. He was actually originally named Palti. How come he's called Paltiel? Shepaltiel min ha'aveira. Hashem saved him from doing an aveira. Or more specifically, that he saved himself using his Yir Shamayim. Ma'asa, what did he do? Na'atzcherav b'nei levena. He stabbed a sword into the bed between him and her. Amar, and said, "Kol Isaac v'dam zeh yedaka b'chef zeh." Anyone who, anyone, meaning himself, who tries having relations with her, will be stabbed by this sword. He put a tangible, physical sword over there, and made a hachota that if I have relations with her, I'm going to stab myself with this sword. In other words, I'm not going to have relations with her. So now one might wonder, he's saying, how much of a deterrent? He's the one who's handling the sword. He should give the sword to someone else to hold. So a point is that this sword was more a symbolic effort. Every time that by putting the sword there, he's looking at the sword, even when his resolve is weakening, and he's starting to want her, he sees the sword and he's reminded how strong his conviction is, how strongly that he's willing to lay down his life for this thing, and that re-strengthens his conviction. Ben Yehuda goes into lengths why I a sword, and why sword is when and bechenek. He explains that the sword represents hinim tasa shal shloima shishim gberim sevzula. The pasuk wasn't written yet; it was written by Ayah Shloima, but as with many psukim. As we find many times throughout the Chazal, you know that the Tzaddikim knew the Pesukim before they were even written. So, or at least they knew the spiritual ideas given in the Pesukim. So Shishim Gbarim, the 60, is the gematria between in his name and her name. Palti, Patiel is 160, and Michal is 100. The difference is 60. So he was reminding himself the Shishim Gberim, it's a level of a Shishim Din, of the 60 levels of Din, should keep him separate. The difference between his name and her name, keep them separate. So that's why he used the sword to remind himself of this deeper meaning. What? Because as a Shishim Gram and Savla, Kol Machod Echad. So Gemara asks, "Vaksev beyerach ite isha," and when David afterwards took Michal from Palti, from Paltiel, then and Paltiel went along with him, crying until they reached the town called Bachorim, and then he turned back, and David brought Michal into his palace. So now the Gemara is challenging using that pasuk. Pasuk says that her husband went with him. That implies that he was her husband, that he treated her that he was with her like a husband is with a wife. The Gemara says, Shnasa Laki Isha. He treated her like an Isha, that he gave a Shera and Ksusa, that he provided for her, but still he kept from her. Mayach ita isha halach avacha ad bachorim, and her husband went with her, going and crying until they reached Bachorim. So now, why is it calling her, why is it calling him her husband if he didn't, if he separated himself from her? So the reason is because he provided for her. He provided for her. Although he separated from her in regards to intimacy matters, he still provided for her as a husband is supposed to provide for a wife. If someone paid him back, it's not recorded. The answer is probably, considering it's Stavon HaMelech, but not actively recorded. Vaksiv Halachavacha. That Paltiel was going and crying. Why would he be going and crying if it wasn't actually his wife, if he knew that it's Dovid HaMelech's wife and not his own wife? So Gemara says, Al mitzvah da'azo minei. He had this tremendous mitzvah of keeping separate from her. Or, we know that Gemara says that that's someone who has the opportunity to do an avera and he actively refrains from doing it, Tarek says that as if it was a mitzvah. So he had this tremendous mitzvah that is now going away from him. So that's why he was crying. He wasn't crying that his wife's leaving him. He's crying that this mitzvah is leaving him. Ad bachorim until bachorim, shenatu shneim kevachorim. That entire time that Paltiel was with Michal, the two of them were like bachorim, or like unmarried people. That they didn't act married at all. The Bnei Yehuda actually adds that V'yelech ita isha, that her husband went with him. You can also read it as V'yelech ita isha, that a woman went with him. That when he slept with her, it was literally like two women sleeping in the same bed. That there wasn't even thought of doing an avera. That's how powerful Paltiel conquered his Yetzirah. Note also that Paltiel had full rights to her. At least according to Rabbi Shreve ben Karcha. According to Rabbi Shreve ben Karcha, Shaul held that that David didn't actually betroth Michal, that Michal is perfectly a panoi, which is why he gave her to Paltiel. So in that case, Paltiel, he agrees with Shaul, he can agree with Shaul and sleep with her. But nevertheless, out of respect for David, and David, and Charles considering a traitor to the king, so he doesn't even and have to. But nevertheless, out of respect for another Yid, he refrained from sleeping with Michal until the matter could be dealt with. Or as the matter didn't get dealt with, that David took Michal back. He refrained from sleeping with her. So it was a tremendous thing. I'm Rabbi Yechanan. Rabbi Yechanan comments, Teksai shal Yosef and Vesutai shal Bayaz. The great thing that Yosef accomplished, Eshet Potiphar tried getting him to sleep with her, Lishke Vasaliyasima, to sleep with her in Eilam Hazan, to be with her in Eilam Haba, that Yosef refrained from being with her. It was a simple thing for Boaz. As it says, it was at midnight, Rusa came to Boaz, Nami told Rusa, go to Boaz at night, and lay by his feet. And, well, Tevel, go to Mikvah, so that you're ready to do Yibam, and lay by his feet, so that way Boaz should do Yibam with you. So she did that, and Boaz woke up, and was surprised, shooken, he was afraid of Vayelophis. And he was a Vayelophis. My Vayelophis, what does Vayelophis mean? Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Amar Rav, Kirash Lefasais. His member became hard like a turnip. Like a turnip head. That he was excited that his body was physically aroused for her, yet his reaction wasn't to do Yibam immediately. His reaction was, I'm a girl, but there's a girl closer than me, so first I need to deal with that. And then I'll do Yibam with you. So in a sense, and he permitted to her, yet nevertheless, as he refrained. And sorry, I skipped it. Something took me shall yet have an ancestor shall Bayaz take me shall Bayaz and Messiah shall Pati Banaish. Bayaz is a great feat over there, where the Palti's is small feat. And so now we continue. Take me shall Bayaz and Messiah shall Pati Banaish to Damaran. As we said, and before the Palti he could have had her, but nevertheless refrained to because of a possibility of a Vega. The Ben Yehuda, actually, he has this the reverse of all the other Mefarshim. All the other Mefarshim explain it that we're going in an order of least to greatest. The Ben Yehuda explains it the other way around. That, what? Yes, that's another thing. That's a Palti was for a whole, at least a year, possibly more. His opinion that Shaul's reign was 22 years, and David was anointed about halfway through. So anywhere from 1 to like 11 years, give or take. And, the Ben Yehuda has it the other way around. That Yosef was the greatest. Yosef was greater than Bayaz, because Bayaz was one night stand versus as Yosef was constantly hounding him, and not just like one thing, but every day with different methods. Every day he'd come onto him with jewelry, with new jewelry, with new dresses, with new everything, constantly trying to wear him down. Versus with Bayaz, it was only once her trying to come on him, and he stood up against it. And the third one, Michal never even tried to get Palti. Michal presumably agreed with David, and so wouldn't want to have relations with her, with him. So she's actually trying to refrain from it. So, and greater the thing as Palti did, but this is even greater. Shows that Palti is only an anniversary. It's only like a small old thing. So the Ben Yehuda explains it a reverse way. Regardless, all three of these tzaddikim went through tremendous challenges and tremendous feats and overcame them. Sai according to the Ben Yehuda, Sai according to Rashi and other Mefarshim. They're all tremendously, yeah. So Amar Rabbi Yochanan, continues on this note. My dechsev rabbis ben satzachaya v'atzalis akolana. Many daughters greatness, but you trump over them. Rabbis ben satzachaya zeba yetif v'yaz. Many daughters valor, that refers to Yosef and Bayaz, the Atalis Akulana, but you're above them, the Palti ben Laish. According to the other Mefarshim, Palti ben Laish was a greater feat, and according to Ben Yehuda, he explains that although Palti ben Laish was the smallest of those three, it's still, as you pointed out, it was a longer duration. Significantly longer than any of the others. Yosef was only for a few months, and Bayaz was only one day, one night. But Palti was for an untold amount of time, and he held himself. Therefore, he rises above them. And similarly, Amar Shmuel bar Nachman Amar Rabbi Yonasan, Ma'adachsev Shakarachin Vavla Yeti. What does it mean that in false is the grace and emptiness is the beauty? Shakarachin, grace is emptiness, that Yosef. That refers to Yosef. Yosef was being tempted by grace. Potiphar's wife, as we know, where the Bnei Chum were cursed that they're not going to look as nice. Potiphar's wife, being a descendant of Chum, wasn't inherently beautiful, but he was constantly changing her outfit and her jewelry and trying to charm him through chayin, through outer charm. Vavalyefi, a beauty, empty as beauty, Zebayas, that refers to Bayas. Rus, as we know, was tremendously beautiful, was on the list of most beautiful women in history, and Bayas withheld himself from her. But nevertheless, the two are smaller because Yerth Hashem Hitisal. Fear of Hashem, that's what deserves praise, that Palti Ben Laish. That refers to Palti, whose fear of Hashem separated him from Michal. So that's that deserves praise. Davar Acher, another explanation in given on this pasuk, Shekar Achein Zedere Shem Leisha. Also, grace refers to Moshe's generation. Moshe's generation was on a tremendously high level. They got the Torah. But nevertheless, they're small compared to Vehevel Yeti. The beauty is nothing, Zedere Shel Yeshua. Yeshua's generation was also tremendously great. And they're the ones who went into land. They were tremendous Torah mitzvahs. And nevertheless, what's the highest level is Yer Hashem Hitisalo Zedere Shel Chizkia. That refers to the generation of Chizkiyahu. In generation of Chizkiyahu, it said that they checked from Dun to Be'er Sheva, all the way from the top north of Eretz Yisrael to the top to the bottom south, and there was not a single Am HaAretz. Everyone knew Torah, and this was largely because of Chizkiyahu's own efforts. Chizkiyahu would hang a sword over the Batei Midrashim and say, anyone who doesn't enter this. Gets a sword. What? Ed Yerushalayim. That's why he hung the sword over the Beit Medrash, representing that similar to how the golden snake was Shemai Talnes put it on a pole to look up. He's reminding them to look up. What? The copper snake. Not gold. Copper. He's reminding them to look up, to fear heaven, the sword that's a physical manifestation of the fear of heaven. And indeed, Chizkiyahu was zecha that the sword of Chizkiyahu did not the sword of Sancheyev did not conquer Chizkiyahu because of these tremendous efforts that Chizkiyahu put into keeping Torah that saved him from Chizkiyahu from Sancheyev. So, Chizkiyahu's generation was greater than even Moshe's in Yeshuas. Davar Acher, another explanation. Shekarachin ain't that there is a Moshe of Yeshua. Shekarachin is Moshe in Yeshua's generation. Velvayeti that there is a Chizkiyah. It's Chizkiyah's generation. Yes, Hashem Hitisalo, that there is a Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi. It's the first generation of Rabbi Yehuda. Of Ramir, Rabbi Yehuda, etc. Specifically, it's calling it Rabbi Yehuda's generation, Because as we know, like Weinberg, in that story, Rabbi Yehuda spoke positively about the Romans. The Romans decreed that Rabbi Yehuda should become the leader, first speaker among the Chachamim. So being the first speaker, the generation is called after him. Also, we know that Rabbi Yehuda was a farmer. He was a poor farmer. He wasn't particularly wealthy. So he's a good example of what's about to be said. Amar al-Derech Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, Yishai Yerushisha Tumidim Miskatim Taos Echad Vayiskum Torah. That the generation was so poor, this was the generation right after Bar Kochba, so the Romans were coming down extra hard on the Jews. So people were so poor that six Talmid Chachamim had to share one cloak to study Torah. And Rabbi Yehuda himself had a one cloak between himself and his wife. We know, Gemara said elsewhere, that he had one cloak between himself and his wife. When he'd go out to learn, he'd wear it. When wife went out shopping, then she'd wear it. There was one time that his wife was going out shopping, that the Chachamim came to declare a public fast at his house. He wasn't even able to come down to join them in his own house because he didn't have anything to wear. So it was such a poor generation, yet nevertheless, there were so many Talmid Chachamim that were crowding the Bat Midrashim. There were six to one cloak in the Beis Medrash. And they were crowding in. The Torah was so widespread that it was able to stand. In Chizkiyah's generation, there was the threat of death. Chizkiyah threatened them, go in there or you get the sword. In Rabbi Yehuda's generation, not only it wasn't there anyone pushing them to learn Torah, it was quite the opposite. The Romans were actively making decrees to erase the... erase study of Torah. As we've learned a few days ago, they made a decree against spread of smicha. They made many other decrees against learning Torah. Prevent Jews from learning Torah. Yet nevertheless, Jews went to Maseiras Nefesh to study Torah. Also, Chizkiyahu's generation was a generation of wealth and comfort. Well, it didn't start with wealth and comfort. It started poor, but with the study of Torah, they were able to immediately see the benefits. Sancheir was defeated. They became wealthy. But in Rabbi Yehuda's generation, the benefits weren't immediately visible. Still, everyone was still poor. Rabbi Yehuda himself was still poor. But nevertheless, they all gathered to study Torah. So that's the tremendous thing of that generation. All right. In your name, Mashiach Gola. In the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, it brought that the minhag is to count people using the pasuk Hashia Tamecha, which has 10 letters. Seemingly, it says in the Sefer Pardes from Rashi that you count using the pasuk Vani Brev Chasdecha. So how come Hashia Tamecha? The explanation can be given that in the later generations, in times of Mashiach, and the darkness is an extra covering, and when there's 10 Jews together, then the first thing that they should ask for is the goal. Hashiach Samecha, Varach Snach Hasecha, Or Menas Mada Eila. From a Sicha, from the Rebbe. From Parshas Yaakov Kodei, Tashem Mem Gimel. And the Alter Rebbe Shulchan Aruch, Erna Alacha. We've been talking about tzitzis made by a non-Jew or women. So now a similar kind of discussion. The author of the discussion is that a Jew will attach his tzitzis to a garment without intending to do so for the mitzvah. So there's different opinions as to this. According to one opinion, the tzitzis are kosher, but if not, then why would Torah have to exclude a non-Jew? Because non-Jew is not going to attach them for the mitzvah. Non-Jew is not capable of as far as Allah is concerned, non-Jew is not capable of that kind of kavanah. However, there's other opinions that say that if a Jew attaches tzitzis to a garment and is out intending being for the mitzvah, it's possible. His opinion and explains that why does Torah have to exclude non-Jews? It's disqualifying them and for a situation where a Jew standing over him, helping him, and telling him to make it for the sake of the mitzvah. Nevertheless, even in such a case, the tzitzis are invalid. The halacha follows the second opinion, that tzitzis have to be made l'shma. Nevertheless, b'shas ha'tchak, where someone doesn't have another talis of tzitzis, besides for other than and one that was made with a shalei shma, and it's impossible for him to untie the tzitzis and attach them to the garment into l'shma, for example on Shabbos, one may rely on the first opinion and wear this garment. A bracha, however, should not be made because tzavik bracha l'akel. And the bracha doesn't, and isn't active on the mitzvah.